Welcome back to the Cinecube Podcast. I'm Connell.
I'm Billy.
I'm Dion.
And I'm Reese. Today, follow us down the Yellow Brick Road as we discuss the cinematic classic The Wizard of Oz, as well as the various sequels, prequels, adaptations, and influences that have followed it. Let's start with the original, though. What do you guys think?
Still one of the best movies ever made.
Yeah, good film.
It's not really a contest, I don't think. Brilliant classic fantasy adventure. I think it's outlasted the original, like, children's novel and all the, like, sequels to that, like the Wizard of Oz, Return to Oz, whatever, like, the other ones, like, the other novels in the Oz universe. I think that's a like, testament to its ability. It's a real cinematic classic. It's a milestone for a reason. One of the first films to, like, properly use colour and be beautiful because of it. Oh, my God. Like, I think films... And, like, colour is a, like, you know, it's a given now. But films still need to appreciate the joy that colour brings to themselves a lot of the time. Because The Wizard of Oz, it is made by the colours that are in it. Like, obviously The Yellow Brick Road, that's an obvious one. But every single thing is made, it fits the tone so well. And that's one of my favourite aspects of it, the visual look of it. It, like, defined 30s cinema, I think.
Yeah,
wouldn't
have impacted quite as much if it was the black and white road. Like, you know, like.
Well, to be fair, you say that for quite a few years, obviously with TV, it wasn't like a big hit at the time, and it only came back to popularity through like a TV broadcast resurgence. And some TVs obviously didn't have colour, so people didn't really get to experience the technicolour of it. So,
oh, okay.
But that it's still as popular as it is today. So I think that's, like, it's not even just a testament to the technicolour, it's a testament to the film itself, that it's so timeless.
It's still, even for the time, like, if you took out the colour, you would still have something grand, because the sets, the designs, while the colours make it more pop out for the audience, it generally still looks amazing, because it'll... I'm honestly going to say this hot take. I don't think any film has ever reached, like, to how much the set feels alive to today. Like,
yeah.
There's a few films here and there, but, like, Blade Runner comes to mind and stuff. But, like, the sets just feel so large of life that I don't know how we're going to ever do that again.
You can't. Obviously, we'll get onto some of the attempts to recapture it later, but... if you just look at something like, I don't know, Wicked, that just came out a couple of years ago, and that's trying to have the grandioseness of The Wizard of Oz, but it just falls flat.
Yeah, it's too much CGI.
We'll get onto that later.
It's not even just CGI, it's just The Wizard of Oz, and like classic Hollywood in general, it's like a labour of love, and it takes like all these moving cogs to make something work, where now it's very standard, it's very clinical, and... Obviously, there was the studio system at the time, but if you had to put in a lot more effort to make a film on the scale of The Wizard of Oz than you would have to if you were trying to make it today.
Even the musical numbers, like, I'm not even a massive musical fan, and every song sticks out. Because, like, the craft into making this very much... I don't think there's a lot of ballads even. Like, even Over the Rainbow, which is very much a ballad, has such a beautifulness to it, which makes the whole film stand out more... And even the Yellow Brick Road song by the Munchkins, the song about the lion, about how he wants to be, like, brave and stuff. There's so much to it. And, like, I guess we can talk about their songs, but, like, it's just so 30s, but also timeless.
Yeah. It's I think the classic Hollywood vibe's never going to die, because, well, especially for a long while, because it is the birth of cinema. We're still looking back on it today with all the remakes and adaptations, like we said. But the music, I think, really carries it, really, like, carries itself through the whole film. Like, there is, of course, the repeat of, oh, we're off to see the wizard, that carries with it along the narrative, and it kind of bookends a lot of scenes. But, like, there's always, like, in musicals, there's always, like, that I Want song, you know, where we, like, state the character's motives. And, like, they're so memorable in this film. Like, because you know, it's a kid's film based on a kid's book, and the, like, problems are so... like, easily digestible, like, you can get on board with it straight away. Like, the Scarecrow, oh, he doesn't have a brain. Tin Man doesn't have a heart, he's made a tin. Lion, cowardly. Like, it's a really nice, like, flip-flop on its head of usual, like, tropes and that. I think that's another, like, testament to its, like, long-standingness, how, as a fantasy, it's so simple to get behind and understand. Like, yeah, Munchkins are weird, right? But, but the rest of it, it's all based in, like, Western tropes and mythology. You know, there's wicked witches, there's a big city, there's a good wizard, there's a good witch as well. Like, it's all and based in, like, proper myths.
You can look into, like, the whole thing about it being very much a metaphor on World War II and the idea of how we're finding the very much peace out of it.
I don't know. I wouldn't say World War II because this came out before.
Oh, World War I, sorry. Yeah, one of the wars. But, like...
One of them,
No. You could even argue... Nowadays, really, it's very much hits close to home.
I do see where you're coming from, because it does have, it, like Reese was saying, it's got a timeless message, and that's the reason that parents are still showing the kids it today, is like the first film. Like, I remember it was probably one of the first films I'd watched, and I'd imagine it's the same with most of yous. It's, it's just got a timeless quality to it, and it's like, you wouldn't watch it and think, oh, wow, that's almost 100 years old now. It's like...
Seeing it in the cinema, I think, for the first time... And like for a 90-year-old film, you go, wow, how the heck they do that? Because even if it was a remaster in 4K, I would love to see the original print and see how that was, because if I ever would go back in time, that's the thing I would do, because I want to see how different it is, because that original print would be absolutely beautiful even now.
Oh yeah, definitely agree. Mm-hmm. I think another thing which I think is great about it is the amount of times it's been repeated in pop culture, like the quotes or whatever, like you've got "I'm melting," that kind of thing, that's been used, and then "we're not in Kansas," or "we're not in insert a place here anymore." Like, it's just the amount of times you've heard that, which I think is quite cool. Even when thinking of the songs and stuff, like, even I found it hilarious in, like, "Good Morning Vietnam," where he goes, like, he does that whole speech where, on the radio station, he goes, like, "follow the Ho Chi Minh Trail" instead of instead of the Yellow Brick Road. But, also visually, I do think that the transition between the black and white, like, or it's more like sepia, really, to, like, the colour, you see it as the door opens, it's so smooth.
It's a brilliant technique.
It's satisfying as hell. Like... to see it just go woof, there you go, colour.
Many other films have tried to do that. We'll go back to that again, but like, it still has not compare it now. But
well, War of the Worlds, the Spielberg one did that, didn't it? When it the walk out the house, and then it's all just like a mirrored shot, and it's all like bloody outside or something. Yeah. I haven't seen the film, but I've seen that shot.
Like, it's amazing how much people have like kind of taken ideas from Wizard of Oz, even with it now being close to 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Insane.
It had like the head start, like being the first colour film.
Yeah.
And
well, what one of them?
One of them. Yeah. But is there a definitive first one?
We don't know. I think it's argued and debated upon.
You could say it's one of the famous ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the most notable uses of Technicolor. Mm-hmm. I think most people think that because obviously, like Connor was saying, the transition from the sepia to one of the Technicolor is sort of baked into everyone's minds. And it's the Wizard of Oz identity is just baked into everything, so you can't get away from it, and that's just why it's stuck around for so long. That's why people are paying copious amounts of money to go and watch the terrible version in the Las Vegas sphere at the moment.
It reminds me of the Spaceballs meme, like, Wizard of Oz the merchandise. Wizard of Oz the flamethrower.
Well, it is because they used to have a big casino in Vegas as well, that was like bright green, that had the Wizard of Oz stuff on the side of it. Like, it was literally was the Emerald City, the Wizard's home of vice or something like that.
Oh, no.
It was a gambling machine.
It's such an American story as well.
Yeah,
because obviously indeed. it's not like King in a Castle. It's a wizard who's really a like con artist in an Emerald City. Like the city is like it is the shining city on the hill that the USA represents, and that is probably another reason why it stuck around with like American dominance in cinema and all that. And Dan, you mentioned the whole like World War One metaphor. Could you like elaborate on that a bit?
I think I remember this in university. But there was a great thing where we were talking about this and how like people were saying no place at home, where the idea like people are looking for home now, and Dorothy's the one trying to search for it with what was going on the World War. There's something just homely to find that comforting.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to find comfort in that.
Yeah, it's the Great Depression, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. because obviously Dorothy's living in the Dust Bowl. She gets
literally the Dust Bowl. You see all the stuff getting kicked about all over.
The tornado comes to mind.
Yeah, like I think it is. It is like classic escapism, being whisked away to a magical land full of munchkins and witches and wizards and all that. But especially for Great Depression era America, this is the film they needed. Like cinema, like attendance was like an all time high in this era. No one had any money, but what money did have, they spent on films and escaping in any way they could. You know, this is like the birth of the superhero in this era. This is like, you know, escapism and hope become a real concept in media that that things can like capitalize on. Like with the Wizard of Oz, really does epitomize that. I think it also does kind of provide a warning against it, though, I suppose, because the wizard himself is believed to be this magic figure who can fix everyone's problems. But what is he? No more than a regular man, a con artist at that, who is basically tricked everyone in Emerald City. He's presented as still like kind of a whimsical, nice character. He still like does good for everyone, showing them like the the good in their hearts and that, which could be a statement on like, you know, you don't need the you don't need magic powers to make yourself happy. You need to be happy with what you get, make the most out of it.
One thing which always stands out with that for me is I really do like how they try and compare each of the characters in Dorothy's lives to the other characters in Wizard of Oz. So, like, the wizard is very much the magician, and the Scarecrow and Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion are the three farmers in the area. And the witch is based on the person who tries to steal Toto.
Yeah,
well, yeah, that's the mate that the ending like explicit. It's like, oh, you were there, and you were there. Yeah,
I really like that because nowadays, like, oh, it's a dream ending is always annoying, but like for then, that's such a cool, clever twist. Like, even if it's a dream, she still learns a message out of it, and even if the wizard's like, oh, actually, you can feel brave with this certificate, which is very silly looking back at it, but it's very funny.
It's kind of a bit of a crap message for people in the Dust Bowl, though, isn't it? Be happy with what you got. Make me houses buried under 6 foot of mud. What have I got to be happy about?
You know that those houses? Well, with your $100 you have, you can pay for it.
You know, Emerald City's urban America. Yeah. You know, Dorothy's Dust Bowl rural America. And the wizard himself is, I don't know, he could be a politician, he could be a candidate, could be a...
He's definitely a politician. He's the ruler of Oz, and his whole thing's built on lies and misleading the people to get into his position of power.
Very similar to what's been going on nowadays, which is a very funny thing about it.
The wizard's just a populist who just says whatever,
forever. All the time. Forever.
Yeah, like, eras before that, presidents have ridden themselves to the presidency off, like, populism and just saying, oh, I'll do this for all of you if you like vote for us. And the wizard is warned against that because this is the Roosevelt era where he is promising things, he's working to get these things done, but there are people, there are critics about him who will try and dissuade him from that, try and like dissuade the people from believing in him, saying that they can do better. Roosevelt's nothing but a liar, Roosevelt's nothing but a cheat, you know? And Roosevelt obviously represents the progress in that, and the wizard himself is a warning against that, I think.
And then you have the witch, who's very much this evil woman who just wants someone's shoes.
Yeah, what does the witch represent, do you think?
It's just nightmares, isn't it?
Because the
nastiness. The lady who tries to steal Toto is very much this evil, over-the-top woman who very much is like, oh, I don't like your farm and stuff and whatever you're living in.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, I'm taking your bloody dog. Then supposedly she wants, instead of taking the dog, she wants shoes now.
Yeah.
I didn't know, like, the changes to, like, oh, instead of the dog, she wants the shoes. Something
she wants material capital, I suppose, but like it's another thing about making fantasy out of everyday life, making it fun, especially at such a dark time, which I think is probably what really solidified it.
Because the books were, wasn't it?
The books are all dreams, I think, as well. Is there anything else we want to talk about with this?
Well, I think we've hit on it quite well. We've talked about like the everlasting impact of it, and that could obviously still be felt today with how popular Wicked's been the last few years.
Cool. So then, do you want to talk about the various attempts of it and how they recapture the magic?
I would love to.
There's a film I think we all want to talk about.
Yeah, should we start off with the elephant in the room, the big green elephant?
Oh, well, let's talk about a musical then. Another one. Wicked.
It's okay. It's fine. It's okay.
We're going to talk about the film, I think. That's it.
Yeah, you can talk. I haven't seen the stage shows, but the films, that they're okay. I don't mind the first one. I think the second one was a bit worse, but it's an interesting subversion of the original. It's just, as it goes on, it feels more and more like edgy fan fiction, and you know, like, it's just, any time I feel like a filmmaker tries to revisit Oz, it just doesn't work because it doesn't hit as hard as the original.
Even the Muppets fail at that.
Yeah, the Muppets one's pretty terrible.
I need to see that one now.
The whole thing's a dream anyway, so like, why are you adding lore to a dream?
But then they add Tarantino in it. Like, Tarantino showed up like halfway through the film, taking it over, going, how is this related to Wizard of Oz?
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Nothing quite captures the magic because everything's trying to put a twist on it. Because if you, like, the Wizard of Oz is already the epitome of, like, escapist fantasy, so you need a non-escapist fantasy to try and counteract it. And Wicked is, I think it's, like, probably the first in the trend of what if the bad guy was actually good stories. Yeah. Like, we've seen things with this, like, Lord of the Rings-esque villains being portrayed as the good guys secretly, like, and obviously Disney's picked up on this with all their, like, twist villains, a lot of, like, characters which are bad or good turning out to be, like, more sympathetic, I suppose.
Yeah, but Disney's beat them to the punch with the film, so now by the time the films have come out, it just feels like a worn-out trope.
Yeah.
And then, like, the movie very much tries to add, like, this political message, which you could argue that Wizard of Oz has this, but it's very so blatant compared and so, like, battered in the film. Kind of not, like,
I don't mind the message that
I don't mind it, yeah.
It's I don't think they do it very subtly, and I think it gets a bit mixed with its the way that they present it. It comes across as a little bit weird at points.
Yeah, with a great idea to it. Like, I like the idea that the animals are very much to them slaves, because there's something very interesting about that. It's just, was there any animals in the movie? Like, was there was?
Cowardly Lion.
Cowardly Lion, yeah, that's it. They never, it's just very, I think the idea is, the reason why animals weren't in there because the animals were scared in Wizard of Oz, but, like, even then, that adds a lot of plot holes.
It's yeah.
There were animals in it, because obviously Toto comes with Dorothy, but you've got the flying monkeys, you've got the horses, like the multicoloured horses, Scarecrow, there's crows, so on. There's a big, like, a peacock or something in the background of the, after they meet the Tin Man.
That doesn't make any sense. It's such a strange film.
I think the main point of it is that I think it works on its own as a story. Yeah. That, like, it's a metaphor. It's a very ham-fisted metaphor for fascism and, like, blaming people, like, scapegoats, all
it's
that.
Also very long.
But it just kind of leaves us like a sour taste in your mouth, you know? Because everyone grows up loving The Wizard of Oz and thinking, oh, this is so fun, this is so nice. Actually, the witch was the good guy and the wizard was Hitler.
Like, no, he isn't Hitler. It's the other witch. The other witch who's like, Hitler.
Linda.
No, the other one. The,
Nessa. Adamorable. Yeah. Flip it round. Wicked witch.
Yeah, like Michelle Yeoh's character, who, I don't think she's great in these kind of roles, sadly.
No.
Yeah, she wasn't very good in it. I think it was pretty obvious that the director just wanted her in the film.
Which sucks, because she's an amazing actor, but I think she should have played someone else. Like, The Bear. The Bear would have been great for her. But, like, even then, it's just like, The Bear has nothing to do in the movie. I forgot she was in it.
Yeah, I kind of think that as well, yeah. It leaves a sour taste in your mouth for all the characters, because the Cowardly Lion, after seeing Wicked 2, I don't think anyone likes him, because he turns into, like, some, like, class traitor, I suppose. He's like, he snitches out all the other animals, and he's like, oh, the wizard, the little protector, when he's the one, you know, putting the animals in cages, sending them away.
He then gets PTSD because supposedly Alpha Bear kidnapped him when, not really. Yeah, you free him.
Yeah, he's like a sympathizer. It's quite a weird twist on the character. Tin Man as well, like, you can't tell me that the same character who does a little dance and, like, pats his, like, stomach and makes tin sounds and then toots his little hat.
What did they do with him? Like, I just saw that bit where he was getting really pissed off. He's like, oh, I'm going to go, like, I have some stuff to do with a witch and stuff. I'm like, dear God, like, this is not the same dude. This is a different Tin Man.
Yeah, even Scarecrow. The Scarecrow in the movie doesn't really speak. I know the whole twist is supposed to be, oh, it's one of the students, but, like, it doesn't really work because he doesn't even speak.
No. He gets turned into the Scarecrow and then he disappears from the film until right at the end. It's daft.
I think that's the main problem with Wicked. It gets too distracted with the narrative of The Wizard of Oz jingling it in your face, doesn't it?
The whole story derails when The Wizard of Oz starts happening. There's, like, a really noticeable, like, cut in the second film where The Wizard of Oz starts, and then it just, that's when it starts to go downhill.
Isn't there like a weird tonal change too?
When, kind of, yeah, because they just start like fighting. And
they're
like,
fighting, it's this comedy scene too.
Yeah, it's like a comedy fight in the middle of the yellow brick road in Munchkin Land. It's really weird.
After Elphaba's like sister died.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
I kinda like that scene though. It was the most like candid sounding scene in the whole film.
It definitely felt like the tone of the first movie, but even then it's just so weird that we've gone from Elphaba's crying because her sister's died to a funny little scene where they're pretty much not fake fighting, but definitely bantering.
Yeah, like slap fighting.
Yeah,
it's a good scene. It just comes at the wrong time in the film, I think.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the songs.
I don't really have anything to say about the songs themselves. Really. I think they do their job. The musical songs. You like musicals?
It's
like
really hard because I don't want to compare them to like Wizard of Oz, because Wizard of Oz is very much classical one.
Songs.
Yeah.
This one's just Broadway musical in a movie, and it just doesn't work.
Should we talk about the visuals of it though, because I've got a big bone to pick with this.
The lighting.
Yes, the lighting. What's the guy's name? Does the CGI and the lighting for this?
I don't know.
Oh, he's the director or something. Anyway, he's known for doing this in his films, where to hide like bad or mid or just them being insecure about the CGI, every single shot has a massive lens flare, like a solar flare is going on in the background of every single scene. So distracting.
The library dancing scene is so awful because of just how it's in your face. I remember watching it with my friend. I turned over to them and going, you know, in Gremlins where they go bright light.
Yeah. like Wicked's not a bad looking film. The CGI is fine. I don't know why they felt so insecure about it to the point where they had to feel like they had to, you know, like hide it, because in some scenes I couldn't even tell Elphaba was green. But, you know,
that's the problem with Wicked. If you sap in the color of the Wizard of Oz, you've taken a wrong step.
Exactly, yeah.
It's not even colorful. It's just so dull.
I wouldn't say that's just a Wicked problem, really. Though I would say that's just a modern problem with lighting and coloring. Because it's like, I don't know if Hollywood just ran out of gaffers or something, but it's just, it doesn't work.
Even like with Return to Oz, which I'm going to quickly mention. That
Which one's that? Is that
it's the one where it's like,
is that
very
the one with
creepy?
The wheelers?
Yeah.
The wheelers. Terrifying one.
Yeah. Disney made that, by the way.
Disney in the 90s was something else. But like, it was, it's really hard to compare with what's that, because it's such a different film tonally, but it's so miserable. Like the scarecrow is the pumpkin man or whatever. Is this the creepy... It's like Jack the Skeleton, but if he was made by people who loved Cthulhu, or loved Lovecraft, it's just terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like, Dorothy's back, but this time, the Scarecrow is pissed.
This time like, it's personal.
Speaking of Return to Oz, actually, has anyone got any other adaptations they want to, and like other things they want to throw out there?
There's Oz the Great and Powerful, isn't there? Which is
really weird, because that's a Sam Raimi film, and like, you know, Sam Raimi, Spider-Man, horror, classics, and he makes that, and it looks horrible.
It begins good, and I do wonder if Disney took over, because it begins, like, when it shows the lights and everything, like how it does it, it's very similar to The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst thing is, the human stuff was a lot more interesting than the stuff in Oz, which is the worst part. How do you do that?
Yeah, you've kind of failed there when your regular farmhands and that are less interesting than witches and wizards and Emerald City.
I like the idea of it. Like, pretty much the wizard is this guy who fails in the circus, and he's trying to get his life back together. And the only way to do this is to go to Oz. And then he one day, similar to Dorothy, wishes so hard that to go to another world, he goes to Oz.
Yeah. It's
mental.
There is an interesting story in there about how a guy with just nothing but charisma and the clothes on his back manages to like become the ruler of a whole city and, you know, the most powerful man in Oz. There's a good story like behind that, I think.
That's sort of like the complete opposite of the Wicked effect, where it's like the American dream. Like you say, a man from a, as Jeff Goldblum would say, a corn-fed hick, rising up with nothing on his back to become, like you say, basically what is essentially the president of Oz.
Exactly, yeah.
It's generally such a great opening, and then everything after that becomes so convoluted. Because, what is it? The witch is actually this good person, but she becomes corrupted, and then they take stuff from Wicked. Like, oh, there's actually an evil witch. Witch, yeah. Like, and she's like, oh... I'm going to turn you evil and stuff. And then they include a puppet, like, doll lady, and it's just wild.
Yeah,
there's a monkey who speaks, and it's just...
It goes too far with the concept, I think. It just kind of, like, loses the plot a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Also, on a side note, John M. Chu is the name. John M. Chu.
He did Gem and the Hologram.
He did Crazy Rich Asians and...
Oh, yeah, that's
Gem
and
the Hologram.
That's why he wanted Michelle Yeoh in this, I think, because she's in it as well.
Mm. But yeah, he's the name. Everyone hunting down Paul Walker in his head, please.
Yeah, I thought I really liked Crazy Rich Asians and stuff. I do think he's really good. It's just Wicked's not for him.
Yeah, it's because every film now feels like it's like filmed in the Disney box, the Disney Disney orb.
Yeah,
because they're afraid to show the CGI background.
Take them to Pinewood Studios.
That's a big problem, I think. But can we talk a little bit more about Return to Oz? Because I've got a lot to say about that one as well and how creepy it is. Oh my God. Terrifying film.
Weird, isn't it?
I don't remember much of it because I haven't seen it since I was a kid, really.
I only remember the opening sequence and then the Wheelers.
The opening sequence, because we talked a lot about how The Wizard of Oz is a like metaphor for like it's the Great Depression, that it's escapism. The Return to Oz is an electroshock therapy induced nightmare. Literally, that's what happens
to
her.
Have you read Alice Through the Looking Glass?
I have not, but I get the idea.
Where it's like, it's very much just a nightmare fuel weirdness. Mm-hmm. And very much I was expecting the whole twist is Dorothy was actually in like therapy.
Yeah, that's the one where you say, oh, she was dreaming the whole time or she was dead the whole time. But this one feels like the actual consequences. It's so creepy. The effects are like different in a way that makes it feel more real and visceral. Because, there's no more fantasy than the colour gradients all ruin. Everything's just crumbling to dust. It's just like shooting your childhood, really.
Like
in the face.
Comparison of that to a Sidney Lumet's The Wiz as well.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, that's like New York set. That is like probably the most... I've never watched it all the way through personally, but that seems like the most interesting way to adapt The Wizard of Oz.
It was...
It's like the way... It just takes it into a completely different genre and style with like... I think it's really interesting. I don't know how someone would come up with the idea to see The Wizard of Oz and do something like that, but I think it's really interesting. It's been on my list for a while, but I wanted to watch it before this, to be fair, but it seems to be really hard to find.
I'll check it out. Yeah. I think I've heard, like I said, the Broadway musical of it, but I remember like hearing like this. It reminds me of the Cinderella movie where it was very much like a person of colour actress playing the main character, and it's very interesting to see that. I do want to check it out, but it does seem like my cup of tea, and it's just different.
Well, I've yet to see a bad Sidney Lumet film, so it's definitely on the list.
What's the general gist of it again? Because I don't really know much about it, apart from that it's The Wizard of Oz, but with like black actors.
I think it is just like, it is the story of The Wizard of Oz, but it's basically like, it seems to be set in, it's New York, isn't it? Yeah. And like Mike, I'm sure Michael Jackson's the scarecrow in it, and like but they've got proper urban designs. So like the scarecrow's nose is a Reese's cup wrapper.
It's very creative, and that sounds very cheap. But like when you look at it, if I remember from my parents have told me, and my nana, who was like, "Oh, you should watch this." It's very much like a modern retelling.
Yeah. It's The Wizard of Oz for a new age, I suppose, isn't it? It obviously doesn't have the charm of the original.
Like what Wicked should have done.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a more nuanced age, yeah.
Connell, you had an adaptation you wanted to mention, didn't you?
Yeah. This one, it just came into my head from years ago. I saw it when I was, like, in year six, and it was called, like, After the Wizard.
Right.
And all it is... basically just the Scarecrow and the Tin Man, they like fly away out of Oz trying to look for Dorothy. So they go to like Kansas in real life.
Right.
But it's just nothing happens. They just encounter this one like wise dude on a train and he says some words of wisdom. But like all they're doing is like, oh, we have a bit of problems in Oz. We need to find Dorothy to come, like, get us. And nothing really happens. Like, I think the bit which I found semi-hilarious was when They were trying to get on the hot air balloon at the start, and there was plenty of room for three people in there, so they could have brought the lion along. This is why I only mentioned the other two.
No lion.
It was because there's, before they take off, a bunch of the flying monkeys start like gathering around. It's like, I don't know, there's like 50 of them or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh shit, there's no room in the hot air balloon. What we're gonna do? And the lion's like, step back, I'll handle this. And they just kill him off.
What?
Like,
what?
Just straight up, like, you don't see it, but he just goes, like, they start flying away and they're just casually like, bye, see you later. And
is
then
he's
like,
film?
Right, who's first? Then it cuts back to them. I'm like, what the hell just happened?
Oh my God. Is it a kid's film?
It is. It's just, but it was like a really low budget one, like by the studio, which I understand if they were trying to go for something a bit different, but the execution was just terrible.
The
like,
Wizard of Oz.
Killing off the lion in 10 minutes and then just having this whole thing of, The Tin Man, the Scarecrow, just travelling around the US. I don't know, it was like a road trip or something like
that.
The
Wizard of Oz, but in real life.
Uh-huh.
It was
a bit weird. So,
who directed it?
A guy called Hugh Gross. He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, so that says something. Most of the actors don't either. The premise is, a 12-year-old Kansas orphan turns to the Scarecrow and Tin Woodman for help during a difficult time. She imagines that things have not gone well in Oz since the wizard left, and that Scarecrow and Tin Man must now find Kansas in Dorothy. What? Find Dorothy in Kansas. On the way, they mistake school children for munchkins and must navigate a New York City train terminal to arrive in Kansas. Meanwhile, the head of the orphanage is exacerbated by the way the girl deals with her loss and emotional trauma. So it sounds like Enchanted or Barbie. It's Barbie. Yeah.
It's Barbie, but like...
A bit crap.
Yeah. Just a weird thing.
Wait, wacky cartoon characters coming to the real world for the first time.
I might actually check that out now. Actually,
I'm going to have to rewatch it all the way again, even if it's
their way to watch it.
It's insufferable.
Well, the one that I wanted to throw out there, it's not a sequel, it's not a prequel, it's not really like an adaptation, it's more of an influence. Idea for this sort of came from a documentary, Lynch/Oz. To summarise, it's like, they argue that, like, the Wizard of Oz is baked into David Lynch's subconscious in, like, the way that he creates his films. Like, almost every aspect of his film draws back on Oz in some way. And, like, when I watched it, I was kind of like, oh my God, this it actually is true. Because I'd already sort of gathered that, because his film Wild at Heart is very Wizard of Oz. It's, like, you've got... Glinda the Good Witch shows up at the end to offer advice, and it's Cheryl Lee who plays Laura Palmer on Twin Peaks. But like at one point, Laura Dern's mother appears to the Nicolas Cage's character in a vision as the Wicked Witch. Like, do you know when they're in the house in The Wizard of Oz and she flies past the window? Mm-hmm. She appears like that. At one point, there's like quite a traumatic scene that Laura Dern's character goes through, and it pans down to her feet. And she's wearing red shoes, and she starts tapping her heels together.
Oh, God.
So it's a really interesting perspective to look at it from. So that was sort of my general, unconventional one that I wanted to throw out there. And like, it's notable in obviously other films as well as the Wild at Heart, but that is the one where it's most prominent.
Yeah, so can you find that in every David Lynch film? Because I know the big twist in Mulholland Drive is quite relevant to The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
But I can't really, well, from what I've seen, I can't really relate it to Blue Velvet very much, apart from the material.
Well, what's in Blue Velvet?
Blue Velvet is kind of a colourful film at points. In the opening sequence and the ending.
I thought it just has a normal, natural kind of feel to it, though. Like...
I haven't seen the film in ages, but I remember the opening having this very colourful feel to it, and then the ending having this colourful feel to it. Very much a mix of blue and red colours.
It does, I suppose.
With roses and stuff.
But there's got to be some more than that.
Yeah, they're,
anyway,
they're not quite vibrant, though. They're, I think, all just like subtle.
The main villain is very much the witch, because he doesn't want to kidnap someone.
That's true. I think that's a thought process for a different episode, though.
Yeah.
Does David Lynch... How does Blue Velvet connect to with the Oz?
Yeah, go on, right there, I see.
Yeah. Like I say, Wild at Heart's the most explicit, but you've got stuff like the motif of the curtain, like the red curtains in Twin Peaks as a doorway to another world, just sort of like Dorothy's ruby slippers and so on like that. That it's I suppose you could draw parallels, go and continue with the Twin Peaks stuff as well, with between Cooper and Dorothy as like the idealistic figures in a world of turmoil. So like Dorothy's having to navigate Oz there, and she's in like this, basically in like another world that she doesn't know how to deal with, and you've got the witch causing problems, and then you've got Cooper, who's like this idyllic figure. He's meant to be like the character archetype of the good guy, like a shining white knight, which is exactly what Dorothy is meant to be as well.
Because I think a lot of David Lynch's stuff is about like, you know, Americana, and like the nice suburban smile is like secretly evil, and like things like that, which I think you could very easily link to The Wizard of Oz and how that like idealizes.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like you were saying before, when you were making all the parallels between every life context and Oz, that's probably what where all the connections have come from.
Yeah,
exactly. I really need to rewatch that documentary because I do own it on Blu-ray. I remember like such an interesting one.
It's quite interesting. It does start to drag a little bit as it goes on, but it is quite an interesting documentary.
It's a great conclusion though they come up with.
I think that's all the lions, tigers and bears we've got time for today. Make sure to check out our Instagram, TikTok and Facebook pages for more Cineclub podcast content and updates.
As always, this episode was recorded and produced by us, the Sunderland University students, as well as being engineered and edited by Emily Main. Special thanks goes out to Steve Cannon, Barbara Sadler and Richard Berry. A reminder that our four witch hunters this week have consisted of me, Connell,
me, Billy,
me, Dion,
and me, Reese. This has been a Cineclub production for Spark. Thanks for listening.